welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Science fiction in this hour. Later on, we hear X-1 from 1956. But right now, from the talented pen of Willis Cooper, we join the anthology series Quiet Please, which has a twist of sci-fi in this story called Not Enough Time. Ernest Chappell stars on the Mutual Broadcasting System from October 6th, 1947.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please, for tonight is called Not Enough Time.
Wait just a minute, will you, please? I gotta bust this thing up.
Only be a minute.
$40 worth of junk and 4 years' work. And here's a bale of notes that the editor of Astonishing Stories would give his eye teeth for. He ain't gonna get them. Yeah, that's just strictly that. No, it was a time machine. Yeah, one of those gadgets to travel in time, you know, turn it on and it takes you back 50 years and so on. You know, like Alley-Oop and the funny paper, like the stories H.G. Wells wrote. You know. Yeah, this was the dial you set for how far you wanted to go in time. And this was the decambulator. Here's a piece of the... Well, never mind what it was. It's none of your business. I sure wish I hadn't monkeyed with a time machine. Oh, this one worked. Sure. That's what's the matter, see? It worked. Well, I don't want any part of time machines, not after what happened to me with this one. You can make one for yourself if you want to, and if you can, but you're not going to get any help from me. Oh, they can be made all right. Me, I'm just a bumble-fingered mechanic out of a garage, and I make one. But I'll give you my first and last piece of advice, Buster. Don't you do it. I saved up my dough, and working around a garage, I could glom onto a gadget here and there that Cliff Oswald didn't know about. I had a lathe there and some other machinery, and I did the rough hand work there. Then when I quit and rented this old busted-down farmhouse out here on Cemetery Road, I bought some more machinery, see, some stuff for precision work and some stock. A piece of iridium from that fountain pen factory in Fort Madison, Iowa. Two or three polystyrene plastics that they made for me in Parlin, New Jersey. Special crown glass prisms I had made here in town. And some other stuff. And quite a lot of other stuff. And try and find out what it was. You know, you'd be surprised how easy it is to drop out of sight in a small town. This place here is way out in the sticks past the cemetery, off on a side road that nobody's used for 20, 30 years. And I'd done all my shopping in Peoria instead of here in Pekin. And I never went downtown for anything. So, nobody knew I was here. It was just that easy. I put in nearly 4 years, like I said. And then, all of a sudden, the doggone thing worked. I was just sitting here, and I turned it on, see? And just like that, it was raining. Well, the sun was shining bright when I turned it on, and for a minute I couldn't figure it out. And then I remembered it rained the day before, and by golly, it was the day before, right then. How do you like that? Well, I stayed in yesterday for 10 minutes, and then, tick, we came back, and the rain stopped, and the sun was shining again. It wasn't even damp outside. Well, I'm not going into a lot of details that you wouldn't understand if I told them to you, but the net of the thing was, I decided I'd really try it. But really. And that's the story. Now, supposing you intended to take a trip back 50 years in time, How'd you prepare for it? Well, I'll tell you what I did. First, I studied an old history of Tazewell County, paying particular attention to 1897, 50 years ago. Yeah, so as I wouldn't make any more bobbles than necessary. I picked out a place on a map where there wasn't any trees in 1897. I didn't want to find myself hanging from somebody's apple tree when the thing stopped. Then I bought my equipment. I got me a revolver and a camera and a flashlight. Then some aspirin, and I was all fixed. I moved the gadget out in the back lot where the map said there wasn't any trees 50 years before, and I set it back to 50 years, and I was reaching for the release when I got a sudden fast thought. There I was, dressed in a double-breasted gray suit with white stripes and a blue sports shirt and a pair of brown and white shoes. It was the shoes, I guess. I looked down at them and I said, "Holy Moses, would I be a number in 1897 in this outfit? They'd throw me in the can before I could say howdy." Imagine. So I quick disconnected the machine from my wrist and put it back in the house and jumped in the car and beat it for Peoria in a theatrical costume house. Well, they thought I was nuts, but I got the rig I was looking for. How do you like it? This here brown derby's a dinger, ain't it? Even with a dent in it. And get a load of the shoes. Buttons. Hey, and you know what? There ain't any place where you can buy a button hook today. Well, anyway, you want to hear the story. I got the machine out again and set it, and I took a long breath, and I said, "Well, kid, hold your hat. Here we go." And I pressed the button. Somebody calling me. Well, there couldn't have been.
You hold up your hands there, you hear me?
What? Now, look out with that gun, Buster.
You hold up your hands or I'll be forced to shoot.
Who do you think you are?
You'll find out soon enough. Keep your hands up now, you hear me?
This is a fine way to welcome a stranger, Bud.
This is the way I welcome strangers all the time. Don't give me any sass either. Who are you?
My name's Walter McCoy.
What you doing here?
I'm a visitor.
Visiting who?
Visiting the sheriff.
Oh, you are, eh?
John Stout.
Pleased to meet you.
Huh?
I'm John Stout, stranger.
Oh, my God.
And you sure are going to visit me. Come on, march.
You see? Smart guy, me. I told you I studied that history of Tazewell County till my head hurt. The only name I could think of when this guy popped up from behind a hedge was the sheriff. Well, John Stout marched me over to a horse and buggy, and he buttoned me to a stanchion with the biggest pair of rusty handcuffs I ever saw and said, "Get out, Queenie," and away we went to the jailhouse. And my time machine lying on the ground out there 2 miles from where I was looking out of an iron-barred window, and it was all set to come back to 1947 in just 24 hours, whether I was there or not. How do you like that? I had a very pretty picture of me getting a 50-year jail sentence and getting out of Joliet just in time to come back to the house out on Cemetery Road and pick up where I left off, only at the age of 76 instead of 26. Very pretty, huh? Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, they had me up before Judge Curran good and fast, but try as they couldn't get anything on me.
Horse stealing.
I didn't steal any horses.
Lurking and lying in wait.
Well, I was just standing there.
Disturbing the peace?
I didn't say a word.
Disorderly conduct.
Well, I said to myself, I'll buy that. It can't be a jail sentence for disorderly conduct. I've got $300 or $400 in my pocket, and I can afford the fine, but I've got to get out of here. So I paid off $10 in costs. $11.96. Sure. Oh, I'd remember to get some old, big-sized bills, all kind of dirty, figuring they wouldn't examine the bills close enough so as I could get away if I got in a jam, you see, before anybody looked at the dates. I was a smart kid. It says here. By this time, I've got a lot less than 24 hours before the old machine takes off, and I'm beginning to get a small order of goose pimples on the back of my neck because I'm not exactly sure where the darn thing is. After all, I'd never been here before except 50 years later, you see, and If I missed the thing, oh, man. I thought, though, I'd kind of case the town a little bit, so if I wanted to come back, you know. Well, I walk up Court Street a block, and there on the corner of Fifth is Bill Kelly's livery stable, where Connigan's Ford agency is now. Right across the street, practically, from where I used to work for Cliff Oswald. There's nothing but a vacant lot there. So I go into the stable and hire me a rig. Get me, hire a rig. And pay in advance, and I take off. Did you ever drive a horse and buggy? Man, I was all over the lot. But I got out there after a fashion. Out where I thought I'd left the machine. So I tied the horse to a tree. Somebody'd come and get him, I figured, and he could eat grass. That is, if horses eat grass. And I started looking. It was just a great big field, see? No landmarks of any kind. I got more and more panicky because that old clock was going round and round and round. And then I saw a hole in the ground, a big hole, dirt piled up around it, and out of the corner of my mind, I sort of remembered seeing it when I landed, when Stout grabbed me, and all of a sudden I had it. This old house I worked in is about 50 years old. And by golly, this was the foundation part that somebody was digging. Oh, well, sure, I found the machine easy then, south of the excavation, about 50 yards, lying there, ticking away as if nothing had happened. Oh, boy, I said. Oh, boy. I practically kissed the thing. And then I jumped about 6 feet in the air.
What are you doing on our land, young man?
Wow. Wow, there was the most beautiful girl in the world. Just the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. Red hair, no makeup, man. And I tell you, she looked beautiful even in an 1897 outfit. A brown dress down to her ankles and a white shirtwaist with big red polka dots on it. And a hat that, yeah, that looked like a dog's dinner. And she looked wonderful. And she pointed those big blue eyes at me and she said again,
"What are you doing on our land?"
And when I could get my breath, I said, "Who are you, lady?"
My father and I merely happen to be the owners of this land, that's all.
Well, I was, well, lady, I'm sorry.
You're trespassing.
Well, I'm sorry. I used to live there in that house you're going to build.
What?
I'm going to live in, my name is Walter McCoy.
Well, I'll thank you to get off our land, Mr. Walter McCoy.
Yeah, sure. Sure, I'll get off.
Right away.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, go on.
Well, lady, what's your name?
Carrie McKinstry. And this is Carrie McKinstry, so there.
Carrie McKinstry. Gee.
Sir?
We're both Macs, Carrie.
How dare you?
What?
A gentleman would address me as Miss McKinstry, sir.
Sir? Well, I'll be darned.
I don't understand you.
I said, look, we're both Macs, see? Maybe you're Irish, too.
Are you Irish?
Irish descent.
So are we.
Well, what do you know?
About what?
Hello, Irish.
Sir? You're fresh.
You're beautiful.
Take care, sir.
Hey, do people really talk like that?
What people?
You live around here?
On Annalisa Street, down near the firehouse.
Well, what you doing out here?
You ask an awful lot of questions.
Well, I'm interested.
You're a masher.
What?
A masher. Don't you try to mash me.
My gosh, Miss McKinstry, I wouldn't hurt you.
You certainly talk strangely, Mr. McCoy.
Well, I come from a long way from here, see.
Are you a drummer?
No, I used to play a little piano when I was a kid.
I mean a traveling man.
Well, yes. Yes, you might say I'm a traveling man. Yes, I guess I am.
What are you doing here?
Traveling, I guess.
Well, then, you travel.
Listen, Miss McCary, I have to wait a while.
Why?
Well,
what's that machine thing there?
It's a gadget.
Oh.
Look, I have to wait a little while, Carrie. Let's you and me sit down and talk for a minute, will you?
Not in the habit of talking to persons I don't know, Mr. McCoy.
Well, you know me? You just call me by name. Carrie?
Why... Well, what would we talk about?
Let's talk about the future. wish you could have seen that girl. Red hair, blue eyes. Oh, I said that though, didn't I? Nobody's going to see her. Not me. We sat there on a pile of dirt. Now, I don't know what we talked about, though I guess I did most of the talking. I told her about automobiles and radio and skyscrapers and airplanes, I think. I think. And she sat there and didn't believe a word of it, but she loved it. We got along toward dark, and we still sat there. And the sun was down across the river. Oh, man. Yeah. I can. I forgot for a minute she was Irish. Oh.
Sir, I'll have you know that I'm a respectable girl.
And I picked myself up out of the dirt and shoved my jaw back in place.
Oh, Walter. Walter, did I hurt you? Oh, Walter.
And the sound of her voice came back to me. Remember when I took off on this trip? Somebody yelled at me. Then I didn't have any more time to think because Carrie had her arms around me and she was crying and kissing me. And yeah, it sure was love at first sight. Double. Carrie McKinstry and Walter McCall. October 5th, 1897. And then she pushed herself away from me suddenly.
There's somebody coming.
Huh? Who? Where?
Down the road. Look!
And I looked. I couldn't miss that dapple gray mare, Queenie. And even if I hadn't known it was Sheriff Stout, I could hear way down the road the gong on the dashboard of his buggy. He was heading right for the place he found me.
It's the sheriff.
Well, let me out of here.
You have to hide. Quick. Oh, what would my father say? Walter, hide.
Yeah, but where?
In the cellar. Quick, jump in.
I must go down cellar one of these days and see if my footprints are still down there on the cellar floor. I drove myself right up to the knees jumping in. So I scrabbled some dirt from me and squeezed up in the corner. Machine taken away right under the chin. I heard them coming in.
Why, how do you do, Sheriff Scott?
Oh, howdy, Carrie. Seen anything of a miscreant?
A miscreant?
Well, I figured he'd come out here where I captured him before.
Captured? What? Who is he?
He's a doggone counterfeiter, that's who.
A counterfeiter?
Picked him up for disorderly conduct, and he paid his fine, and all the coins was dated from 1932 to 1947. Oh, the fool. 50 years from now.
Oh, no, Sheriff.
My goodness, yes. But he ain't gonna take me in. Put him in jail for 100 years. So you ain't seen him, Carrie?
And I waited on the dirt, holding my breath. I waited 10 minutes.
No, Sheriff. I haven't seen anybody.
Well, all right. If you do, though, Carrie, let me know. It might even be some kind of reward.
All right, I will. Good night, Sheriff.
Oh, yes.
No, I won't forget. You can come out now.
Did I say she had red hair? Brother, I've been chewed out by a hiccup, but Carrie, she threw the book at me. And all the time crying, that was rugged. Well, finally, when she slowed down, I started to talk. Look, I was in love with her. That was day before yesterday. That was 15 years ago. So I confessed. I told her all about the machine and how I had to go back with her and be stuck here. No, she didn't believe me at first, but after a while, I guess I convinced her. I know I convinced her. And I told her I was in love with her. And the moon was coming up. She told me she thought she was in love with me. She knew she was in love. There's a fix to be in, brother. Well.
You can't stay here, Walter.
I guess not, but...
Oh, Walter. I still love you. I'm a shameless woman, but I love you.
You see? I looked at the machine. I had to lay the clock the next morning. We couldn't sit there in the field all night. I said, I'll take you home, Carrie, and we can talk about it on the way. So she said, all right, and she climbed into the buggy and started back to town. You know, you can say what you want to about this world we got today, but you've never been riding along an unpaved road with a hedge fence along one side and big elm trees lining the other side and a lap road over your knees. And the big round harvest moon shining down above the hills up towards Billy Moore's place. And lonesome little lights from kerosene lamps shining out of windows off in the distance. And a girl alongside. Pretty good world they had 50 years ago. Pretty good world. I wish we had it now. Yeah, I should have stayed. But I didn't. Well, we got to her house. There wasn't anybody home. Father was a railroad man who was out on a run somewhere in Decatur or Springfield or Bloomington or somewhere. And we went to the house. I'd seen the picture. She lit a kerosene lamp, and there it was. Brother, I should have stayed. Rag carpet on the floor. A pump at the kitchen sink that went ee-wah, when she pumped the water for the coffee. You know, there wasn't a tin can in the kitchen cupboard. Yeah, I should have stayed. So we were having a little supper and talking, you know, low voices. Eating pork chops and applesauce, and there was an apple pie on the table, and coffee, and, well, believe it or not, in a mustache cup. It was awful nice in the other night. And there was another.
Who's that?
And the door opened. A great big tall woman walked in. She jumped when she saw me.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Why, good evening, Mrs. Stiles.
No, you had company, Carol. I wouldn't have come bursting in like this.
It's all right, Mrs. Stiles. Mrs. Stiles, this is Mr. McCoy.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Mr. McCoy.
How do you do?
Well, I've been poorly, but I'm tolerable now, thank you. You a stranger in town, Mr. McCoy?
Mr. McCoy is a stranger in town.
My goodness. Nice and cozy, ain't it? Didn't your father approve, Dad? Not that it's any of my business, of course, but it is a little odd. Isn't it, Mr. McCoy?
Yes. Yes, it's very odd.
Mr. McCoy is a friend of mine, Mrs. Stout.
Well, I should think so.
Mrs. Stout lives next door, Walter. I forgot to tell you.
I see, and Mr. Stout lives there, too.
Yes, of course. He's up at the county jail quite a lot. He's the sheriff, you know.
Yes, I know.
Yes, we know.
He's out looking for a mystery or something.
Is he?
A stranger, in fact.
Is that so?
He'll be called any minute. Maybe he'll drop in.
Oh, well, I've got to be going.
Yes, Walter is in a hurry. He just stopped in for a bite to eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just happened to see that rig from this Tally's livery stable out in front. And this guy, what's that rig sitting out in front of McKinney Street? So I decided to stop in for a minute.
Well,
where did you come from, did you say, Mr. What was the name?
Why, McCoy, Mr. Stout.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought Carrie said. Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Walter.
I get it.
Look what I've done to
you. It's all right, honey, if I can get out of here before Stout comes home.
She'll tell him.
You kidding? Sure she will. I don't see how fast that horse of Mr. Kelly's is.
You'll have to hurry, Walter. Oh, Walter, darling.
Yeah, it can't be helped, honey. But I wish...
Oh, Walter, you will come back, won't you?
You bet I'll come back. And I'll make me another of these machines, and I'll come and get...
Listen. He's in there. He's right in there with Captain Kitchen.
Wait, turn out the light.
Come out of that car, Biddy. Come on.
Back door, Walter, quick.
Hear me? Come on, that boy.
I'll come back, Carrie. I'll come back.
Hurry, hurry.
I'm coming in there.
Here, Walter, I love you. I love you. Come back. Come back.
I'll come back.
Well, where'd he go?
Hurry, Walter. Run, run.
And I ran. Brother, how I ran. Over a board fence. And I could hear the sheriff yelling right behind me. And the machine was ticking and ticking, and I was wishing it was 8 o'clock and wondering what had happened when I did come back to 1897. And then... dodging an automobile in the street in Pekin, Illinois, and
1947. Yeah. Yeah, the machine was set for 8 o'clock, and it was 8 o'clock, only 12 hours earlier than I think. So I walked on out here. I kept wondering what happened to Sheriff Stout when I disappeared. What happened to Bill Kelly's horse and buggy? And what happened to Carrie McKinstry? Well, I came in the house. I turned on the light. I didn't see anybody at first. I heard her voice first.
What?
There in my easy chair was an old, old woman. And she spoke to me.
I waited so long. 50 years. I've waited, Walter. And you didn't come back.
When I came to, there wasn't anybody in the house but me. Just me and a time machine. I told you this place of mine is close to the cemetery road. Well, there's a funeral going by in the road now. No, I don't need to ask who it is. It's an old lady, 74 years old, who waited and waited and waited for a sweetheart that never came back. So there isn't any use in the time machine anymore. She said, I never came back. Then she knew. Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And Nancy Sheridan played Carrie. Sheriff Stout was Donald Briggs, and Catherine Meskill was Mrs. Stout. The music for Quiet, Please is composed and played, as usual, by our good friend Gene Frazzo. Now for a word about next week's Quiet, Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
I call next week's story Camera Obscura, which, if you understand Italian, means dark room. You may like this story of what takes place in this dark room.
And so, until next week at this time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 6th, 1947, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. You are listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now time for X-1 with the James E. Gunn story, Wherever You May Be. This one of several shows that adapted Gunn's stories, starring William Renfield, Patsy O'Shea, and Jack Orison, from June 26th, 1956, on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, Wherever You May Be, by James E. Gunn.
girl. You on the fence.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, come here.
Well, I'm right comfortable where I am.
Oh. Listen, kid. Is there a service station on this road?
Well, Merv Wheelock got a gas pump at the general store.
Oh? How far is it?
About 18 miles.
Oh, that's a big help. Well, I don't know what else to expect in the middle of the Ozarks.
You want me to help you, mister?
No, just keep out of the way, kid. Ow! Well, there's nothing funny about that. You just going to sit there and watch me sweat, kid?
Oh, no. There'll be lots more to watch.
Well, I don't know what's so amusing about watching a man change a flat tire. Ow!
You sure you don't want me to help, mister?
No, I'm perfectly capable of changing a tire by myself.
Mister, it's rolling away.
What?
Your tire. It's rolling away.
Hey, come back here, you. Well, this is the most sadistic tire I ever... Now, stay put. Well, why don't you go home?
Hank.
Why not?
I run away.
Oh, well, that's tough. There. Now, listen, kid. You know a cabin about 15 miles up the road?
I reckon.
You know where the turnoff is?
There ain't no turnoff. You just drive till the road peters out and you take the footpath. You gonna live in that place?
Mm-hmm. Just for the summer.
Oh.
Well, so long, kid.
Oh, mister. Hey, mister.
Now what do you want?
Well, nothing. Only you forgot your jack.
Oh, that does it. Where are you going?
No place.
Thought you said you ran away.
I surely did.
Don't you have any relatives?
No.
Friends?
No.
All right, then, go on home. Oh, come on now. What are you crying for? All right, get in. I'll give you a lift. Listen, look out for those notes. There's over a year's work in those.
Oh, a year's work in them pieces of paper?
Huh? Those are notes for the thesis I'm going to write.
You write stories?
No, research paper. I have to do it to get my degree at the university.
Well, what's it called? I mean, the story you're writing.
It's not a... It's called The Psychodynamics of Witchcraft with Special Reference to the Salem Trials of 1692.
Oh. Witches?
Yeah. All right, where do you live, kid?
Well, I can't go home. Pa'd beat me again. Oh, he'd pretty nigh skin me alive, I guess.
You mean he hit you? Little kid like you?
Well, he don't use his fist. Not often. He uses his belt mostly. Look here. On my knee. See that black and blue mark? And this one?
Never mind. Why does he hit you?
Just me.
Well, he must have some reason.
Oh, he wants me to catch some strong young fellow who'd do the work around the place. A gal don't bring in no money, he says. Leastwise, not a good one.
You're much too young to get married.
I'm 16.
You don't look more than... Well, I don't know.
Most girls my age got a couple of young ones. One, anyway. The way Pa carries on, you'd think I didn't want to get married. Now, it ain't my fault no fellow wants me.
What seems to be the trouble?
Mostly, I guess I'm just unlucky. One fella I went with pretty nearly a year. He busted his leg. Another nigh well drowned when he fell in the lake. Now, it don't seem right they should blame me, even though we did have words.
Blame you?
Well, they say it's courting disaster instead of a gal. Fellas just stopped coming round. You married, mister?
Matthew Wright. No, I'm not married.
Wright. Abigail Wright. That's right, Purdy.
Abigail Wright?
Oh, did I say that? Now, ain't that funny? My name's Jenkins.
Mr. Jenkins? Oh, fine. I met your daughter on the road.
I brought her back. Oh. Look, Mr. Jenkins, I got a pint bottle in my pocket. Care for a little drink?
Terrible week.
Well, I'm sorry. I repeat, I brought your daughter back.
Why?
Well, she had no place to go.
She ran away.
Now, look, Mr. Jenkins, I realize that teenage daughters can be a nuisance, and after meeting your daughter, I can understand how you feel. Still and all, she is your daughter.
Got my doubts.
Now, Mr. Jenkins, your daughter may have given you good reason to lose your temper, but beating a child is never sound psychology.
Beat her? You mean walloper, whaler? Man, I never laid a hand to her. I dastn't.
But she said...
Come in here.
Oh, now, Mr. Jenkins, I assure
you... Come in the cabin. You look around this here room, mister. See them dishes all over the floor, those chairs all splintered like they was kindling, that table turned over bottom side topmost like a turtle on the road? You think I beat her?
Well, the place is a shambles.
I ain't saying Abby did it. But when she gets unhappy, things happen. Dishes come flying through the air. Funny things happen around Ab. Ever since she started filling out 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, she's only 16.
16? Don't let on I told you, but she's past 18. There, you see?
Oh, it just fell off the shelf.
Well, look, you're a city fella, passable looking. Why don't you take her with you?
What? Oh, now, wait a minute, Mr. Jenkins.
Well, she's right pretty when she fixes up, and she can cook right smart. Go on, take her.
Well, you must be mad. You can't give a girl away like that. If you'll excuse me, I think I'd better be going.
Nobody asked you to bring her back. This gal eats more than I do.
Oh, now, look, here. Here's $10. Buy yourself a jug.
Well, I'd like to, but I can't do it. It ain't worth it. You brought her back. You can take her away.
Oh, here. Here's 15.
Well, I should know better. All right, mister.
I'll get her.
It ain't no use, though, I can tell you, mister.
All right, Abigail. Get out of the car. You're home.
But, Pa...
Oh, he isn't mad at you. He's welcoming you back. Now, come on, get out.
Oh, dirty, nasty old man. Serve him right up that bottle he's pulling busted right over his head.
Goodbye, Abby. And remind me never to see you again. What are you doing here?
Waiting for you.
But listen, this is my cabin. I rented it.
I know. What kept you?
Well, what are you doing here? How did you get here?
Oh, I reckon you're hungry. Look, why don't you sit down? Supper's about ready.
Now, wait a minute. I came here by car. How did you get here?
Well, I rode. Oh, it's lucky I did. This place needed a good sweeping.
Is that your broom?
I know. It was here in the cabin. Pa loaned me a mule. I let her go. She'll get home all right.
But you can't stay here. It's impossible. What would people say?
Well, who'd care? Pa don't. Oh, please, Mr. Wright, let me cook and clean for you. I won't be no trouble. Honest, I wouldn't.
Oh, now, look, Abby, you're a nice girl and I like you, but you'll just have to go back to your father, do you understand?
All right.
What? What was that? What happened? Oh, look at that, the car. I must have left the brake off.
You reckon it's hurt bad?
Well, rolling down a 10-foot grade into a tree didn't help it any.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Wright.
Are you? Well, anyway, it looks like you'll have to stay here tonight then, doesn't it?
I reckon.
I could have sworn I put that brake on. Listen, you're going back first thing in the morning.
Oh, sure. Sure, Mr. Wright. I understand.
Abby,
tell
me something. Who wrecked your father's house?
Libby.
Libby, huh? Who's Libby?
The other me. Mostly I keep her bottled up inside. But when I feel sad and unhappy, I just can't keep her in. Then she just lets loose and goes wild.
Yeah, schizo. Abby, where did you get an idea like that?
Well, when I was born, I had a twin sister. Only she died real quick. And when I was bad, my ma used to say Libby would never have been mean or cross or naughty. So when I'd done something bad, I started saying Libby'd done it. I guess after a while, I've begun to believe it myself.
Can you control it, Abby?
Not much. You see, when I get feeling mad and mean, things just happen, that's all.
How about a rolling tire?
You sure did look funny. Oh, I was just feeling mean about Pa, I guess, and I took it out on you.
I don't believe it. It's absolutely impossible. It's primitive. It's straight out of Frasier's Golden Bough. There's got to be some explanation.
Hmm?
Illusion or hypnosis. There's got to be some physical explanation.
Well, I don't see why. I mean, if a thing just happens, you don't have to explain it. It's just there, ain't it?
All right. Here. Now, make that cup move.
Why?
I want to see you do it.
But I don't want to. I never wanted to do it. It just happened.
Oh, come on, try.
Now, no, Mr. Wright. Look, it never brung me nothing but misery. It's bad enough when you can't help it, but it's worse when you do it on purpose. Nothing good will come of it.
Come on, try. I want you to move that cup. Now, go ahead, Abby. Just move it without touching it.
I can't. I just can't.
Why not? Why can't you?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's because I'm happy.
Oh. You can't move it now.
No.
All right. All right, then get your things. You're going back to your father right now.
No, I ain't going. I can't.
Ah, listen to you. You're a stupid backwoods girl. Can't. What kind of a way of talking is that? You're going back to your father because you're an ignorant, dirty hillbilly. Abby, you did it. You did it. It came right at my head.
Do I have to go back?
Oh, no, sir. Not if you help me. Abby, I've got a hold of something here that... What a thesis! Abby?
Hmm?
What's, courting like here in the hills?
Oh, sometimes we walk and look at things together and talk a little. But if the night is warm, we just sit and hold hands and whatever.
Like this?
Mr. Wright, do you like me a little bit? Oh, not marrying-like, but friendly-like?
I like you very much, Abby. Very much.
Oh, Mr. Wright. You kiss real pretty.
Abby, what happened to your fellas? I mean, the other boys.
Well, folks said I'd the evil eye. I mean, Hank fell off the roof and broke his leg, and Gene, well, he fell in the lake and liked to drown. It wasn't my fault it was after we'd had words, now, was it?
No.
Why, Mr. Wright, you're shivering. Maybe we'd better go get your jacket.
Abby, tomorrow we're going to drive to Springfield to do some shopping.
Really, Mr. Wright? Why, I ain't never been to Springfield. Oh, ain't that wonderful? Mr. Wright.
Huh. Are you happy, Abby?
Oh, it's the happiest I've ever been in my life. I mean, eating in a fancy restaurant and even dancing and all. And now us just sitting here together in the moonlight. I never thought anything like this would happen to me.
Abby, I'm afraid maybe you don't understand.
Well, what do you mean, Mr. Wright?
Oh, you know that dress I bought you? That's for another girl.
What?
Yeah, it's for another girl. I'm going to marry her. She's about your size, and I thought we could pick it out that way.
Oh, no, I... Oh, Mr. Wright.
Abby, wait a minute. Where are you going? Wait, I want to talk to you.
No, I'm going to bed.
Matthew Wright, you are a no-good, miserable cad.
want any more coffee?
You still feel bad, Abby?
You want me to move that cup for you today? I can do it real good.
How do you know?
Well, I just got a feeling. Look.
You can do it now?
Sure, I guess. There, it's getting easier.
Look, Abby, I want to get some things out of the car. I just happen to have them things for tests. There may be other powers.
Well, I don't care much one way or the other, Mr. Wright. If it makes you happy, it's all right with me.
Abby? Abby, where are you? Abby, where did you go? Abby?
Here I am, Mr. Wright.
Abby, where were you?
Springfield.
But that's 50 miles.
I know. I just kind of wished I was there, and then I was. I brought back a frying pan I admired in that hardware store window. Ain't it pretty? Got a real copper bottom.
Didn't you have any trouble getting out of the store without anyone seeing you?
Well, I was outside, but I could see in the back room somehow, too. I knew his name was Albert, and he was doing a crossword puzzle.
Now, how could you tell all that?
Well, I just kind of looked inside of his thinking. Like this.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Abby, don't.
I could look right inside your thinking now, Mr. Wright.
Abby, Abby, wait a minute. Abby.
You wouldn't. You didn't.
Now, wait a minute, Abby. You've got to understand.
I understand. I understand everything you've been thinking. You devil. Well, there ain't nothing too bad for anyone to do that.
Well, you've got to let me explain.
You, with your kindness and your city manners, how could you do it? You made me fall in love with you. It was just a trick. You just wanted to make me unhappy, that's all. Why, even Pa was never that mean. I'd as soon marry up with a rattlesnake.
Well, Abby, what are you going to do?
Well, I haven't made up my mind yet, but I'll think of something.
Got to think of some way out of it. She's in that other room thinking what to do to me. I've got to think of some way. No, it's no use. As soon as I think of it, she knows. Oh, got to keep my mind busy. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as maybe if I could get her father. No. If there are two outs and bases loaded, or men on first and second, and a ball is hit, which, in the opinion of the umpire, can be handled by an infielder, the infield fly rule shall be invoked, and the batter is called out. The base runners may advance at their own peril. Their peril. I've got to think. No,
Daddy,
I mustn't think.
Make the cherry pie, Natty boy, Natty boy.
Oh, no, she's absolutely certain now she can do anything she wants to. I've got to act on the spur of the moment, keep my mind crowded with something else. Oh, it's a lovely day. Breathes there a man with soul so dead? 'Twas brillig and the slithy toes did gyre and gimble in the wave. Froggy went a-courting, and he did ride sword and pistol by his side, ring Tom Body Michikambo. Full fathom five my father lies, of his bones are coral made. Seabirds hourly toll his knell. Hark, I hear them, ding, dong, dell.
That's pretty.
Abby.
Where are we going?
Oh, Abby. What are you doing here?
I couldn't let you leave without me. I've got plans for you.
Oh?
Very interesting plans.
But how could you tell I left? I was thinking all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you were thinking some of the cutest little rhymes. Oh, but that was on top.
On top?
Why, sure. Way underneath, I could hear plain what you were thinking about running away in this old car.
Well, then why didn't you stop me? Conk out the motor or something.
Oh, I didn't want to. I told you I could see way down underneath the top of your thinking. And you know what I found there? All the time, even when you were making me unhappy to test all them strange things I learned how to do, way down deep, you're in love with me.
I am.
Surely true. So,
We're going to get married.
Are we?
Mm-hmm. There isn't much you can do about it now, is there?
No. No, I suppose not, but... You know, it's a frightening thought getting married to you, Abby. A wife who can read your mind and all the rest.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it, darling. Well, I can only do those things when I'm downright miserable. Everything will be perfectly all right. Just as long as you keep me happy.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 26, 1956, on the National Broadcasting Company. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.